a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We're about halfway through the session, and it's been an interesting session. Obviously, there's been a gray cloud, a budget cloud, hanging over the session, and it's dominated all the discussions, much of the media, and the public's attention, not only here in Pierre, but I guess probably across South Dakota. It's the first thing people ask us about as we go home. And yet, I've sensed, and even in our press conference last week, there was a young lady from Washington High School who brought up the fact that, you know, after all the budget talks, she said, well, are we doing anything else for South Dakota? And one of the folks who came back from a Cracker Barrel in Sioux Falls said a lady in Sioux Falls rolls at a Cracker Barrel and asked somewhat the same question, is there any good news out of Pierre? And I thought maybe just for a minute or two I would address that. You know, we're so fortunate here in South Dakota. There's we don't have the dire budget problems that many other states have, and in fact, with some very minor modifications over the last few years, we'd actually probably not have a budget deficit at all. Probably less of the credit goes to state government than to the people of South Dakota for that. We've had a very stable economy in very difficult national times. But we don't have the really dire situations that so many states are facing, and so we are really, I think, in Pierre here going on. I wouldn't say it's business as usual, but the business of the state is going on. Now, some people would say, how can you possibly have 500 bills and still deal with this budget issue? And before I came to the legislature, I wondered the same thing in any year. How can you have 500 bills and do any of them justice? It's a issue that I've thought about quite a lot. Really, there's a phrase on the national level, the living constitution. It refers to the idea that the constitution, the federal constitution, is a living, breathing document that constantly needs attention like any living creature. And the same is true on the state level. Our state laws and our state constitution are almost, and you realize this as you serve in the legislature, they're almost alive. They're living and they're breathing. They need to be fed. They change every day. They're organic. They're moving and changing. A good example would be, just some of the issues that we're dealing with this session, texting issues. If you'd have brought a texting bill to the legislature 25 years ago, people would have thought you were talking about Smith and Corona or something. I mean, they would have no idea. Today, texting is an issue, and it'll continue to be an issue whether people should text and drive. Wind energy, issue that we didn't talk about. Some in the 90s, but very little, and when we did, it was with a lot of puzzlement. Now wind energy is a major issue in the state. Telecommunications, obviously, somewhat smaller issues, but important issues, issues like wineries and how to allow wineries to grow and operate in South Dakota. All the biofuels discussions were not issues a quarter century ago. So we have 500 bills, and all those bills are dealing with various aspects of how we live together here in South Dakota. I think the process is working very well. I think if Senator Scott Heideprim, my counterpart in the Senate, if he were here today, he would agree, and I think we would give a lot of credit to our Republican counterparts, to Senator Dave Knudsen and Representative Bob Fain. They've been very good to work with. I think they recognize, like we do, that the process is very important. It must go on. We've got all these issues to deal with, and we can't let any kind of a budget crisis stop us from constantly modernizing and working with that living, breathing constitution or that set of laws. Some other good things that are happening, I would say the scholarship situation in South Dakota is a positive. I was in here in the 90s when scholarships were very divisive, and we fought over them really quite a lot, and then they disappeared altogether at some point after I left. And now we have an opportunity scholarship program that probably isn't perfect, probably isn't as big as some of us would like it to be, but we have a scholarship program that has broad support on both sides of the aisle. And this year, again, we're tweaking it a little bit. It's a changing thing, as I talked about. We're talking about whether or not we should expand it so tech school students have a better opportunity at it, whether we should expand it somewhat or relax the rules so that homeschool students could participate in it. Those kind of changes are another good example of how the law just keeps changing. I think another positive thing would be our agreement on no new taxes. This is clearly the wrong time to raise taxes on the citizens of South Dakota. It really has not been a partisan issue out here. Both parties have agreed that we're not going to raise taxes on the citizens, and I promise you 80 or 90% of the people of South Dakota, maybe even higher than that, would agree that that's a very good thing for South Dakota. I think I think related to that and related to the budget, we have a shared interest in reviewing all the corporate tax breaks that go on in South Dakota. And they're all put there for a good reason. They are positives. We're trying to stimulate economic development, but I'm not sure we've had the right reviews and the right targets, the job targets in place for those. We need to review the policies, and we need to also see if we can't find some savings for the taxpayer. It does not seem to be a partisan issue. I think that there will be a bipartisan effort to really review those. I would think that Senator Dave Knudsen's bill, Senate Bill 124, which passed the Senate yesterday, and which Senator Julie Bartling will talk about here in a second, again, shows a bipartisan spirit of the legislature to really address education funding and to try to improve education funding on into the future after we get through this current recession. Now, that's different. That's a different argument than we've had in many past years in PIER. And I can remember a time when if you brought up education funding, there was a certain group of people who argued that more money doesn't necessarily make for better schools, and you could not get everybody to agree that the schools are underfunded. Today, that argument, if it exists at all, is really a minority argument, and we all agree that the schools are underfunded. We need to move forward with better funding, and it's just a matter of how to do it and how much. I think in the criminal justice arena, we're really making some good progress. The best example would be a reform of the sex offender laws. Again, I served in the legislature at a time when legislators just seemed to always want to one-up one another and act like I'm tougher than you on crime, and we would just constantly ratchet up penalties. And today we're paying a price for that in the corrections budget, and probably paying a price for that in how we're really hurting people instead of really trying to help people who have problems. The sex offender thing is probably something that I don't know if we could have tackled 10 years ago, and today there's a really good spirit of bipartisanship. Nobody's playing politics with it that I can see, and we're going to do some good things there. I think there's an interest on both parties to do some alternative sentencing or to try to explore some ideas on alternative sentencing, and that would be another example of that. The last thing I would mention is what I would call Aggie bills. I was out here again in the 90s, and back then if some sort of a rural farm legislation would show up on a House or Senate floor, certain legislators from urban areas would just attack it as Aggie bills, and sometimes they would pass the word as an Aggie bill, you know, as if to slight it or to kind of assign that it doesn't need our urban support. I've not heard that expression in the last several years in the legislature. And I sense a really good bipartisan effort, and not so much bipartisan Republican Democrat, urban rural effort, to really work together as one state to advance agriculture, and that's a really positive step. And you can see it. We've had success in wind energy legislation, in biofuels legislation. It also kind of spins off into small school legislation. Obviously, our agricultural friends are very interested in preserving their small schools, and I give all the credit in the world to urban legislators who have not allowed us to have a rural-urban split on school issues. You know, I just have not seen it here in the last couple of years. So I think a lot of really good things are happening. We're making some good progress in all those fronts, and probably many more other legislators could point to. Still, the budget is the overriding thing in this session. It will continue to be as we go into the last half of the 2010 legislative session. One of the real key players in that is Senator Julie Bartling. Julie has been, she was 18 years, she was a Gregory County auditor, and for 8 of her 10 years in the legislature, she's been on the Appropriations Committee, which obviously is always important, but is extremely important this year. That's why she's joining us this morning. She will be leaving the legislature after this year. She will not be leaving public service. She's hoping to continue as state auditor in South Dakota. But right now she has her hands full. She and the 18 members of the Joint Appropriations Committee, they're trying to put this budget together in really difficult times, probably the most difficult budget we've faced in South Dakota since the 1930s. So Julie is here with us today. She's going to give us a report on the Appropriations Committee, and we'll be happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hunhoff. Good morning. As stated, I'm Senator Julie Bartling. I live in the Burke area, and I'm pleased to be able to come to you today and talk to you about the appropriations process, which is the committee I'm most focused on with the rest of my colleagues on that committee. As you know, it's a $4 billion budget, which is a large budget for the state of South Dakota, but it's very manageable and one that we need to work on very diligently. It's a $1.18 billion $1 million in general funds, which are the funds that we are most concerned about as far as how are we going to raise revenues to meet those budgetary needs. And that, of course, all mixes in with an additional $1.9 billion from federal and another just short of $1 billion in other fund revenues to meet that $4 billion budget. And so it is very large, and we've completed our hearings from the various departments of state government as to their proposals as presented in the governor's budget address, the increases and decreases, and the work will now continue on in appropriations as to where can we find some savings in state government, especially on the general fund side, so that we can be responsive to the concerns over revenues that seem to be diminished or slowed in this economic recessional time. So our work is yet to come, and we will be working with our individual caucuses to have all members understand where we're at with the budget and take in thoughts and suggestions from our colleagues as to where we can all come together and balance a budget for the state of South Dakota. As Representative Hunhoff said, we did take up Senate Bill 124 on the Senate floor yesterday. That was Senator Knudsen's bill, and it was a very bipartisan bill to find ways to increase funding for K-12 education over the next into the future. The difficult part, and it is for, I think, many legislators out here, if not all of them, is we want to be able to increase funding this year for K-12 education, and statutorily we should be doing that. 1.2% should be going out to the schools in the next year. That's the inflationary rate. However, an amendment on the floor did fail just by one vote in order to amend that bill to provide the 1.2. Discussions that were had is the priorities. What do we prioritize in order to meet the funding problems that we have, the revenue shortfalls that we have? But I don't think there's anyone out here who doesn't believe that education is equally important across the board. And we are far from being done in this session this year. So there are opportunities yet. If there's the will and the desire to find the ways to provide that additional 1.2 funding for education, or more or less if we can do it. I personally certainly hate to see us go without a year of increase, no matter how big or how small, because that certainly puts a disadvantage to our school districts. They've got a year of shortage, once again, that if there's no funding, it certainly is hard to make it back up over time. And even when the times are good, we've seen in the past that we just haven't been able to do more than at least the inflationary rate or that 3%, whichever was less in the statute right now. What Senate Bill 124 does is it changes that, however, so that it is 4% or the rate of inflation, whichever is greater. And it's all based upon the general fund receipts that will be coming in. So as we move out of this recession, and it will take time, South Dakota went into the recession slower, we will probably come out of it a bit slower. But as those general fund receipts come in, we hope that will be a very generous revenue building source for K-12 education into the future. So one thing we did hear in appropriations today, which I think is really a significant boost for local units of government, the federal government, through the stimulus package, has given the bonding authority of $225 million for local governments. That would be counties, cities, school districts, in any local unit of government. And what we needed to do today in order for South Dakota to be able to access that bonding authority was to change statute to give the governor the authority to authorize the issuance of taxable bonds, because that's what these bonds will be like. Right now we have authority, the governor has authority for tax-free bond issuance. These bonds that will come through the stimulus program are taxable. And it's quite a program that will have to be developed, and the Commissioner of Bureau of Finance is working very closely with county government, city government, and school governments in the counties throughout the state to make them aware of this possibility for them to access these bonds in order to complete some of their very needed projects, public works projects. On the government side, that could be something with public safety, city halls, things of that nature. On the public side. It could be in so much as to help community or organized efforts in building wind farms, for an example. There's a wide range of opportunities for the other entities out there. The difficulty is that December 31st of this year is the final date for any of those local units of governments to either have a project that they want to use the bonding for. If not, the hope is that they will sign a resolution returning the authority back to the state, so the state can then take and reallocate those funds out to other projects. There has been already some efforts in Yankton County where that is going to help with a project, the dietary building at the Human Services Center. And I believe Representative Hunhoff was a part of that, as well as his counterpart on the Senate side, Senator Hunhoff, to help the Department of Human Services so that that dietary building can be built and maintained. It's a great opportunity for local units of government, and not all counties will have projects. That's very, very difficult. It takes a lot of time and process to put a project together. So, you know, those who cannot use it, we do hope that they will send their allocation abilities back to the state so that other counties and areas can use it in a variety of projects that will help everyone across the state. And so with that, I'm pleased to be here today. It's a great opportunity to visit with you, and it's been a great pleasure to serve in the South Dakota Legislature. I've enjoyed public service. I've been in public service basically all of my life, and so it's been a great opportunity to work with such good people all across the state, and I do look forward to an opportunity to continue to serve the state on a different level, and hopefully meet a great many people as we go across the state this summer. And so with that, I think we want to open it up for any questions that you might have.
I guess I'd like to touch on Senate Bill 124, and I guess, Representative, do you think as it moves into the House, you'll be able to keep that bipartisan work going on that bill?
Well, I really think so. In fact, I think all the leaders are co-sponsors of the bill, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, I think that the Democrats like the idea that it really gives us a good policy moving forward as we move beyond the recession. We obviously have some concerns on how it affects education funding in the short term. And that was addressed in the Senate and fell one vote short, as I understand. And I suspect that the same argument will be made in the House. And truly not for political purposes, but for school purposes. And Julie touched on it earlier. If we don't meet our obligations for local governments, in this case for the schools, or if we were talking about Medicaid funding for adjustment training centers or for mental health centers, or all the local folks that are depending on that, if the state says we're not going to meet those obligations because it would build our base. And that's a legitimate argument for the state budget. It will hurt our base, and it will make the situation all the tougher next year. That's a legitimate concern. The exact opposite is true for the local school districts and for the mental health centers, for the adjustment training centers. If we don't meet those obligations, their base goes backwards, and they dig themselves an even deeper hole on the local level. So in some ways, it's not a partisan thing, Democrat versus Republican, urban against rural, none of that at all. It's sadly state versus local, and state legislators, I hope, will show some concern for the local budgets. Some of them have reserves and can survive in the short term. Some do not. But I think the issue with Senate Bill 124 will be there will be good support for the long-range policy, a lot of concern for the short range. Do you think to add to that, Julie?
No, I agree. And as in appropriations, we hear it in throughout many of the budgets, especially with the budgets that are involving social services and programs that help the neediest. And the providers that are out there, whether they're working in our nursing homes or they're working in those community connection centers, you know, they're helping individuals who are very in despair and cannot help themselves. And we really do need to be cognizant of their increasing costs, those don't go down just because the state doesn't have the funding. Their ongoing costs continue to rise, and they just don't have any other sources other than what we are able to provide for them. They do possibly receive some federal funds, but oftentimes that needs requires either local or state matching dollars in order for them to bring those in as well. So it's a difficult time, there is no doubt. So, but we must, I think we just need to be very careful that we don't go too many years without increases for those providers, and the same for our school districts, because it's going to be very, very difficult for them to catch back up.
And they were, I think most people would agree, again, like the schools, many of these Medicaid providers were quite underfunded even as we went into the recession. I know in Yankton, I mean, the wages were very low. They were facing huge energy cost increases, a lot of inflationary increases that are probably not reflected in the CPI. So they were strapped before the recession, and now we're, if we freeze them for a second year, a freeze sounds, well, we can handle a freeze. But a freeze, basically, with all the increases that they're facing, I think it's probably legitimately can be argued as a cut. So there's a lot of stress out there, and they're quasi state government agencies. You might argue they're so heavily funded in many cases that they're almost like state agencies. A good example would be some of the adjustment training centers when we closed Custer and some of the other places like Custer, where we had actual state FDEs and they were truly state agencies. We closed some of them and moved the clients and moved those populations to local community centers, adjustment training centers, I call them. I think there's a new word for them now.
Yeah. But
community-based. When you get my age, you have a hard time changing language, but community-based services. And they're still heavily state-funded. They're quasi-state agencies, and the important thing is we're all in this together, and that's the argument that we'll make on Senate Bill 124. We're all in this together. It's not the local versus the state. Let's all work together to try to share the pain and try to share the budget and see what, you know, where we can best make those dollars work for the people.
And as a follow-up too, you know, we've been able to the fiscal year 10 budget that we're in right now, and some of the fiscal year 11 budget that we are working on at this point in time, there are still stimulus dollars that will help us work through some of those very difficult issues. But those monies will dry up; they will be gone, and we need to take a very good, strong look at how are we going to proceed once they are gone. And it's as Bernie said, it's going to take a bipartisan effort to really take a look at what can we do. It's really difficult to cut services because we are a service-based state. We provide service, and we provide for those who can't care for themselves. We provide for protection and then for the general services. And the number of people due to the recession at this point in time that utilize state services has increased drastically, whether that's in the social services area or whether they're receiving unemployment benefits. So we've got some really difficult things to deal with, and we have to make some very wise, cognizant decisions that hopefully will not hurt so deeply to the public, but be prepared that when times do come back again, we can step things up and make a difference.
There is no more bipartisan group than the Joint Appropriations Committee is peer watchers know. It's almost like a fifth caucus. I mean, they belong to the Democratic and Republican caucuses, but they almost create their own caucus because they spend so much time together and they have such a shared mission. And that's even in normal times, and I think that's probably more so this year. And it's also because of the people who end up on appropriations and are successful on appropriations, like Senator Bartling. They're the moderate people who care deeply about numbers and know that there are people behind the numbers. And I think it's just the kind of people who end up on appropriations and stay there and fit that description.
I think it's an interesting
group. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I do think that's one of the silver linings is we do have a very, what I'm going to call a cohesive appropriations committee, because we all represent rural, urban. I attribute that as Bernie does to the people that are on there, and especially to the chairs. They've been very open to the Democrats and to sharing their ideas, sharing their thoughts, and I appreciate that because the best decisions I can make is from the information that can be given to me that that the other caucus is working on, and I do appreciate that. I know we as Democrats do.
Some members of the Republican leadership mentioned to me that they're working very closely, keeping their hands involved with the appropriation process rather than sort of waiting for you guys to come up with your results. I was wondering, Representative Hunhoff, if the Democratic leadership is doing the same thing. Senator Bartling, if you on the Appropriations Committee are feeling those leadership hands also in the same pot that you guys are trying to stir there.
Well, and, you know, I personally want the leadership to be involved in the appropriations process. You know, it's when you look at the general appropriation bill, you really can't tell much from that. It's two lines per entity or per department, and you don't get a lot of facts and figures from that. So as appropriators, we do the best that we can to keep our colleagues in our own caucuses informed as to the increases and the decreases. And as we have now come to the closure of hearing those individual departments, we will take all that information now, visit with our colleagues, because each and every one of them has an interest in the budget, and we'd like to hear from them as to what do they see, what areas can we take a look at as appropriators, as a bipartisan group, to make some changes to the budget without hurting so deeply those in the across the state. So I appreciate the leadership being very, very involved and very responsive to appropriations and offering suggestions. It's what we need.
The question for our listeners was from Dave Montgomery. He's one of the few full-time reporters here. He works for the Pure Capital Journal, and he's just a young fellow, but it's a pretty astute observation, actually. Actually, I think leadership probably is more involved than some years, but I think leadership always has taken an interest for the very reasons that Senator Bartling said. The appropriations bill usually comes down at the last day, and they greatly encourage legislators not to tinker with it, and you try to respect that. So if you're not going to tinker with it on the last day, you ought to tinker with it on the 18th and 19th and 20th days, right?
Absolutely.
And obviously some of the bills, that some of the issues that really will affect the appropriations this year will probably end up in leadership compromises, especially Senate or House Bill 1060 and some of those issues with the contractor's excise tax. So leadership will be involved. But even more importantly, I think all legislators are involved, and I'm sure Senator Bartling would agree. All 105 legislators are deeply concerned, and they all have ideas. And there are 105 leaders in the legislature. It's absolutely true.
Yes.
And sometimes we're just the ones who kind of make sure the doors are unlocked and the lights go on in the morning. There's 105 leaders, and they're all wanting to weigh in, and that's as it should be. Other questions? Thank you for your time. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a good weekend. Bye.